Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
What are we doing today?
Today we're talking about an undercover FBI agent.
Okay.
I'm pretty stoked. I gotta be honest.
Have we told an undercover story before?
I don't think so.
We might be breaking new ground here at Not Today.
I think you're right.
Okay, I'm very interested. I mean, I've always been curious how this type of stuff happens, but, you know, I don't know any undercover agents, or at least, you know, they have yet to identify themselves to me.
Yeah, that you know of.
That I know of. Although I don't really, like, interact with that many people on a day-to-day basis. Like, is my barista really an undercover FBI agent? You never know.
Could be.
But, hey, I keep it squeaky clean over here. I'm not doing shit.
That's true. I don't think there's any reason why an undercover agent would be looking at you or me.
That's what an undercover agent would say. Could you imagine, like, you get married to an undercover agent as part of their cover?
That would be devastating.
Like, do you ever recover?
No.
I don't think you ever recover.
No, because it will end inevitably, right?
Right.
Because they're only on a mission. It's usually the opposite. Usually the undercover agent is like leaving their family to be the undercover agent.
Right. Well, anyway, let's get into the story. We're flying off the handle here.
We're already getting into the weeds and we're like 30 seconds in.
Yeah.
Perfect.
but I'm clearly interested.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's a very interesting concept. But before we get into our story today, I wanted to remind you that bonus episode number 54 is out now over on our Patreon. We were talking about two college wrestlers who got mauled by a bear. One of the college wrestlers literally pulled the bear off of his friend. So it's a very interesting story and remarkable, if I do say so myself. And yeah, if you want to get access to that and 54 other bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. But without further ado, why don't we jump into our episode? Joseph Dominic Pistone was born on September 17th, 1939 in Erie, Pennsylvania. He is of Italian heritage. His father was from Calabria and his mother was from Sicily. And he grew up in Paterson, New Jersey, where he attended Eastside High School. He then went on to attend Paterson State College, obtaining a degree in anthropology in 1965. He worked for a year as a teacher at a Paterson school and then at the Office of Naval Intelligence for 3 years before being sworn into the FBI on July 7th, 1969 and assigned to Jacksonville, Florida. Quite the jump. He went from being a teacher to being in the FBI. In 1976, New York was facing a wave of truck hijackings. These loads were sometimes worth $200,000 to $300,000, and mob guys would hijack these trucks and then sell the products. The FBI decided to initiate an undercover operation to target these hijackers and stem the flow of the hijackings. They selected Joe Pistone for this operation. He had experience driving 18-wheeler trucks and bulldozers, and he had already completed a ton of undercover assignments over his 15 years as an FBI agent. He had lived in New Jersey all his life and knew the kinds of people that he might encounter there. Growing up, he always knew who the mob guys were in the neighborhood, because everyone did. And he knew as a kid to avoid these guys and not get involved with them because they were up to no good. So he had some experiences with shady characters as well. And he had regularly worked undercover cases. He worked criminal robbery cases, prostitution cases, gambling, all criminal undercover work. As an undercover agent, he couldn't commit any crimes himself, so he was assigned the role of being a jewel thief, because they needed to pick something that didn't lean violent. Not many jewel thieves are in jail for murder. And to make sure he could pull it off, Pistone underwent weeks of specialized training, because he had to know all aspects of his assumed profession. He needed to know everything diamonds, precious gems, how to pick locks, and the alarm systems. It took about 6 to 7 months to prepare for this operation. And finally, with his training complete, Joe Pistone left FBI headquarters with a brand new ID and took on his undercover name, which was Donnie Brasco. Until his operation was over, Joe Pistone was essentially dead. The FBI erased Pistone's name on office rolls and his personal file, Anyone who called asking for him would be told no one by that name was employed there. His coworkers, friends, and informants had no idea what happened to him. He had to put his entire life and family on hold. He left his wife and children in New Jersey and rented an apartment in Manhattan.
Did he tell them?
I don't actually know if he told his wife and children, because I think the whole deal about being an undercover agent is that no one can know that you are one.
Wait, so like you just abandoned your family for how long?
I assume his wife knew what his job was, and he probably told her that he had an assignment. This assignment was supposed to be 6 months long. He had no idea that he wouldn't return for 6 years.
How do you deal with that as the wife? I mean, you just move on.
Not necessarily.
For 6 years? How old are his kids? Like, you're just going to dip out and then come back? Oh, Dad.
Yeah, right.
I'm 8.
6 years later.
I have no idea who you are.
Yeah, that must be insanely hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of his friends and coworkers and whatever, it was like he vanished. Nobody knew where he was, what he was doing. And if they called his work, they were like, nobody by that name works here or ever has. It's such an insane thing to
what a concept.
Have to experience. In September of 1976, Donnie Brasco set out for the first time to infiltrate New York's criminal underworld. And throughout the story, I'm going to be referring to him both as Donnie and as Pistone, because Donnie Brasco was his undercover name, but Pistone is his real name. So just to avoid confusion, I'm going to be calling him Pistone and also Donnie, depending on the context. He began his operation by hanging out in places that were frequented by suspected truck hijackers. The idea was for him to start hanging out at these establishments and become a familiar face and hopefully get into conversation with the individuals there. At first, Donnie took it extremely slowly. He couldn't just approach a shady character and say, "Hi, nice to meet you, I'm Donnie Brasco, a jewel thief." He had to hopefully get into a conversation with someone that was associated with the people that he needed to be looking into and cultivate a relationship with that person and just hope that it would lead to the individuals he was targeting. It took many months before he said a word to anyone. He would just go into these restaurants in the Upper East Side and Little Italy and order a meal at the bar or sometimes just a drink and just hang around for a couple hours. But he couldn't form a pattern. He couldn't go into the same places too often or even at the same time of day. The job he was pretending to work was not a 9-to-5 or a 5-day-a-week job. So if he were a jewel thief, he wouldn't have a regular schedule. It was very slow and repetitive work. He wasn't necessarily enjoying this part of the job. He said he endured it. He wasn't really loving being an undercover agent at this time. It was just part of his job. Typically, Pistone wasn't a person who liked hanging out in bars at all, and he didn't really even drink, but Donnie Brasco did. And finally, after 6 months, Pistone believed he had shown his face enough to become recognizable, and it was time to attempt to make a connection. He started by having a conversation with the bartender, who he believed had criminal ties. He came in one night, and the bartender greeted him as usual, saying, "Hey, Donnie." And after a bit of small talk, Donnie told the bartender he had some merchandise to sell, and pulled out a small package of diamonds and jewelry. He told the bartender he was looking to get $10,000 for them, which was the street price for that sort of thing. The bartender didn't say a word. He just picked it up and put it in his pocket. Days went by, and despite regular visits back to the bar, the package was never mentioned by the bartender or by Pistone, aka Donnie Brasco. It took about 2 weeks, but finally Pistone went back into the bar and the bartender told him, "Someone left this for you," and handed him an envelope, and inside was $10,000.
Wait, so the first conversation he has with the bartender, he's like, "Hey, sell these diamonds for me?"
I mean, he's had like very basic small talk to get himself to be a regular face. You know, he hasn't had any sort of conversation having to do with criminal activity.
Damn.
So like the bartender knows his name. The bartender knows he's, you know, around the neighborhood. I don't know what else he said in his small talk, but this is the first time that he's ever mentioned anything criminal. It's been 6 months.
I know, but it seems like there was nothing and then just went for it.
Yeah.
Like no foreplay with the bartender.
That's
like
kind of, yeah, that was
sell these diamonds, baby.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it worked?
Yep.
I guess, like,
he had observed
no need to beat around the bush, I guess.
Yeah, he had observed this bartender kind of dealing with shady people. And so he knew what it would somewhat be like to make a deal like this. You know, that's kind of his job, is to like study criminals and like do it back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what he's getting paid for. It's also like keeping him from getting killed.
That part too. Yeah. His life is in constant danger doing this job, especially with the people that he's going to be dealing with. So this was the first step in establishing Pistone's credibility as a criminal jewel thief, Donnie Brasco. Over the next few months, the bartender started inviting Donnie out and introducing him to a bunch of new contacts. They'd go to after-hours places and gamble and drink, and soon Donnie became known well enough. And one introduction was extremely important. He was introduced to a man named Jilly Greca, who was not only a truck hijacker, but he ran a crew of thieves and was what the mob called a made man. A made man was someone who had been officially inducted into a particular mafia family. A made man, straightened out, a good fellow, a wise guy. These were all terms that meant the same thing. Made men are kind of like untouchable. Like, you can't hit them, you can't kill them, you can't even really make them too mad. Otherwise, you'll be killed yourself.
Cool.
Yeah. So since Pistone was now dealing with a made man in the mafia, it changed the entire course of the operation. Instead of a minor truck hijacking investigation, the FBI now wanted him to infiltrate the biggest criminal organization in America. The New York Mafia was a massive, deeply entrenched problem in the 1970s and 80s. The five families were the Gambino, Genovese, Colombo, Lucchese, and Bonanno families, and they held an iron grip on the city. They controlled major labor unions, the construction and trucking industries, and wholesale markets, while extorting local businesses. Their widespread corruption and violence was heavily draining the city's economy. The mafia was allegedly worth over $10 billion a year at this time, and bigger than General Motors, Chrysler, and U.S. Steel combined.
Whoa, that really puts it into perspective. It's bigger than companies combined?
Yeah, $10 billion a year in the 70s.
Oh my God, I mean, what even would that be today? Almost a trillion?
Yeah, probably. And it's like these five major families. Pretty insane. And Jilly was a member of the Colombo family, one of the five mafia families that ran New York City. So the FBI wanted to seize the opportunity and have Pistone get in with Jilly and his crew. Pistone needed to get close to Jilly and become what the mob called an associate. Each made member of the mob will have what they call an associate that he's responsible for. These were non-inducted members or wannabes of the mafia, which was the very lowest rung on the mafia ladder, but it was where Donnie had to start if he wanted in. The way he'd progress was by making the family money and becoming indispensable. So Donnie started delivering a steady flow of stolen goods from his quote-unquote burglaries. He used everything he learned in the FBI to convince these guys that he was a genuine jewel thief, without actually committing any robberies himself, because he can't break the law. He's an FBI agent.
Wait, so the FBI is just feeding him diamonds?
Yeah.
Dude, how much money is this costing? They're like, I mean, they're basically paying the mafia, right?
I guess in a way. Well, so during the operation, any jewelry he brought them was confiscated from U.S. Customs. So they weren't necessarily buying jewelry to then give to the mafia. It was like jewelry they had confiscated.
Repurposing, if you will.
Repurposing.
Refurbishing.
Correct. Yeah.
Recycling. They're recycling.
It's very good for the earth.
Right.
So he'd bring them this confiscated jewelry or watches, and they, of course, had no idea that this was confiscated jewelry from customs. They thought that he was robbing jewelry stores and producing jewelry and making them money.
Also, it is hilarious that the story of the diamond is that it went from criminals to government to another government agency and then back to the criminals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like the circle of life, you
it
know?
Is. Yeah, it's really beautiful if you think about it.
And then it might not even end up with a criminal. It just like ends up on some random person. You know? They're like, oh, this looks cool.
Right. Yeah. They bought it at street price. So good for them. So he'd bring the Colombo family these hauls every other week. And Pistone started handing over more and more jewelry, and he became more and more credible. But then some of the other Colombo family members, Frankie and Patsy, started asking Donnie for help with their own robberies and breaking into homes, which he couldn't do. So they'd ask him to get past alarms or crack a particular safe or get into certain places, and some of the guys were starting to get angry with Donnie when he would make excuses and told them no, and it raised some suspicion. Pistone was called into a meeting with Jilly at his club with Frankie and Patsy. And when Donnie walked into the room, the door was closed and locked behind him as he sat down with the men. Patsy put his gun on the table and said, "Look, Donnie, unless you convince me you're a really great jewel thief, the only way you're going out of here is rolled up in that rug."
Well, talk about pressure.
Uh-huh.
Hey, desperation breeds ingenuity.
That's true.
You better start picking some locks, Donnie.
Yep. Gun on the table. Oh my God. Yeah, gun on the table, locked door. Doesn't matter if you say, "FBI, put your hands up." You got three mafia members in the room with you. So yeah,
did he have like a pull the plug button?
Nope.
No.
Not in this case.
Yeah, dude. Occupational hazard.
No kidding. So with Jilly as a mediator, Patsy and Frankie began to question Donnie on the specifics of his past, like where he was from, who did he know, what did he do, and with no solid answers for these guys, Pistone had to rely on his FBI interrogation training and turn the questioning on them. Pistone recalled, quote, "I tell them, look, you just got out of jail. How do I know you didn't become an informant and that's why you're out of jail now? I'm not giving you the names of anyone." And Patsy and Frankie didn't buy his story and started suspecting Donnie might even be an undercover cop himself. There was no way out of this. He either convinced them he was legit or he was going to be shot in the head and taken out, rolled up in a rug. This questioning session went on for 5 hours. And after all that time, Jilly had heard enough. Donnie hadn't crumbled under the pressure, and Jilly stood behind him saying he believed Donnie. As members of his crew, Frankie and Patsy had to respect Jilly's decision. But as Frankie and Patsy were backing down, Pistone knew he had to play this moment right to gain more credibility. They accused him of being a rat or not who he said he was, which was punishable by death. He couldn't just shake their hands and put it behind him. That would be a sign of weakness. If he was a genuine jewel thief and tough enough to be dealing with these gangsters, he should be mad. It was the only thing they would understand. So he did something he thought no FBI agent would ever do. He stood up from the table and he hit Frankie. He began punching Frankie, and then Patsy jumped on Pistone and began punching him, which he couldn't do anything to defend himself against because Patsy was a made man, so he couldn't hit him. That would also get him killed. So Pistone just kept wailing on Frankie until Jilly finally broke up the fight. But this interaction not only gave Donnie Brasco more credibility as a gangster, because Jilly was convinced no cop would ever act like that, it also gave him an excuse to distance himself from the increasing violence and suspicion of Jilly's crew. Pistone approached Jilly and said, "All due respect, but he didn't want to be involved with these guys anymore. If they had a robbery lined up, don't even tell me about it."
Got two birds stoned at once with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you pulled this out of your ass for 5 hours.
5 hours of questioning, just screaming back and forth with mafia members, mob guys, one of which, actually two of which, are made men. So yeah. They're very high up in the mob, is my point.
Yeah. And then you just start beating the shit out of one of them.
Yeah. Stands up wailing on him because that's what he would do. He's like, that's what a mob person would do. If someone accused one of these guys of being a rat, that could get them killed.
I mean, irregardless of him being undercover or not, they still threatened his life.
Oh, absolutely.
So maybe it felt a little more real because of that.
Sure, yeah. Definitely. But I feel like it was also a risk.
Oh, yeah.
A big risk to not just shake their hands and walk out with his tail between his legs. He stood up and was like, "No, I'm the big dog, by the way."
Yeah. I mean, I guess like just walking out would, I don't know, it would be weird.
Right. That's what he said. He's like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. Wow. Well played.
Yeah. So believing Donnie was the real deal, Jilly introduced him to some other major figures in another mafia family, the Bonannos. Tony Mira, who was a made man in the Bonanno family, was a major drug dealer and a very bad guy.
So do each of the families cooperate or do they have like their own turf? Are they in conflict, like competing? What's the deal?
So I'm sure at some point they're in conflict, but at least right now, the families are cooperating with each other and working with each other.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. But yes, I do believe they have like certain turf.
That's so wild. It's like, I mean, what would you even compare it to? It'd be like, I mean, it's like they're their own government, you know,
it
negotiating
is like
with each other.
Yeah.
And they're worth more than like the most expensive companies at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In like the heyday of Ford and U.S. Steel. That's crazy, dude.
I know.
What do they even do with the money? What, get more money? Yeah. I don't know.
They get more money. They buy nice things. They flex. What does anyone do with a lot of money?
I don't know. Probably buy more power. That's probably what they do too.
Yeah.
So, are they able to like expand past New York?
Yeah, at some point we're going to talk about other mob families around the country too. So yes, this does expand farther than New York.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Like this is in every state?
Like pretty much. Like this
oh
is,
my God.
I don't know if it's every state, but definitely a handful. Yeah. So this turned into a massive undercover operation, which is why he was gone for 6 years.
Wow. I mean, this is like our own cartel.
Yeah. It's also like the New York mob. So they're all talking like this. They're yeah, all wearing their, they're all iced out, wearing their rings.
It is also a little ridiculous because they sound like that. But I mean, I know that they're like killing people and
oh, definitely.
You know, they're being bad boys. You know,
that's an understatement.
Doing some heinous shit.
Yep. So Tony Mira is the person that Pistone is just now introduced to for the first time, and he's a part of the Bonanno family. He abused everyone and was extremely hot-headed, but he made the family a ton of money, so nobody was going to touch him. And he was a made man, so they couldn't. The fact that Pistone was introduced to another made man from a different family was very shocking to the FBI. They didn't realize that the different mob families were working together. They had always thought the different New York families were enemies who were basically in constant conflict and fighting each other. But now it was clear that Jilly and Tony Mira were sharing business interests, and there was extensive collaboration between major mafia families, which the FBI didn't know about. So to get in with the Bonannos, Donnie offered his services to Tony Mira. However, it became quickly apparent to Pistone that Tony Mira was a very dangerous man to know, even by the mafia standards. Tony Mira was a lunatic. He was known as a knife man. If you got into an argument with Tony Mira, you'd be stabbed, and it didn't take much to set him off. Pistone said he was, quote, probably the meanest guy I ever dealt with in the mafia. He was cuckoo. He was crazy. I mean, he'd fly off the handle in a second. So Pistone knew he needed to distance himself from Tony Mira and focused on one of Mira's other connections. Mira had introduced Donnie to Lefty Ruggiero, another Bonanno family mobster, who was a hitman that had already carried out 23 killings. He had the nickname Two Guns because when he went out on a hit, he liked to take two guns. Pistone said he was a 24-hour gangster. This guy was the real deal. But although he was a hardened killer, Lefty was at least sane compared to Tony Mira.
That's so funny. The guy that kills people is more sane than you.
Well, Tony Mira. Yep.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Truly crazy.
To be fair, they're both killing people. They just have different jobs. So like, you know, Lefty's killing people as his job and Tony Mira's killing people kind of for fun a little
bit. Kind of for the love of the game.
Yeah, a little bit.
Jesus.
Yep. So soon Pistone realized this was a really great move because Lefty was a very valuable asset to his operation. Lefty was the Bonanno gossip. He talked about everything they did and was a great historian. He had such a vast knowledge of the mafia, how it worked, how it would work going forward, and so Pistone gained a ton of valuable information from him. Lefty told Donnie if he could become a made man like himself, he could get away with anything. Pistone said, quote, he looked at me and he said, you can lie, you can steal, you can cheat, you can kill. It's all legitimate. So in their minds, it's legitimate to do these things because you're a member of the mafia.
Yep. Don't let that go to your head. I mean,
yeah, for these guys who are untouchable and have so much money, they're worth billions of dollars.
Yeah, they must think they're God.
Yeah, yeah. And if anyone gets in the way of their money, whoo. I don't even, whoo. What do you even say?
Like, I don't know. Get in the witness protection program. How about that?
Yeah.
Move, flee the country.
You would have to. There's actually another mafia story that I was going to tell and will tell in the future where it is about a mafia guy who had to go into witness protection. because of all the craziness that unfolded in his life. So we'll get into that at some point.
The craziness being putting his fellow mobsters in jail.
Yeah, you know, the drugs, the killing, the ratting, that kind of stuff. But that's a story for another time. So through Lefty Ruggiero, Pistone was able to shine a light on the inner workings of the mafia. Now they knew who was in and who was out, what shady dealings they were involved in, what was coming up in the future, who they were involved with, who they were planning on killing, pretty much everything. Because Lefty just loved to yap. And he's yapping to an undercover FBI agent, which is pretty funny. But switching over to hanging out with Lefty instead of Tony Mira could have been a very dangerous thing for Pistone to do. But thankfully, he got lucky, because in late 1977, Tony Mira was sent to prison for drug trafficking, which meant he was out of Pistone's hair. And Lefty seized his opportunity to cash in on Donnie's skill as a good earner. Because Donnie's still bringing in jewelry. He's still pulling his weight, which is what he had to do to become higher and higher and higher in the family and get more credibility and more trust.
Right, but where is he telling them that he's getting it from?
He's stealing it.
But they don't ask, like, where?
I'm sure he made up something, but he's like, he works alone? I don't really know. He's just a jewel thief and is making the money. So at the end of the day, if he's producing money, they're probably just happy with that.
Well, good for him.
Well, good for him.
Right.
And you know what? That's good for him. So Lefty wanted to take Donnie under his wing. He wanted to take him on as his partner exclusively, which meant he'd officially belong to the Bonanno family and would work only with Lefty as the person he answered to. Lefty was a part of a crew that was run by one of the most powerful captains in the Bonanno family, Dominic Sonny Black Napolitano. Sonny Black was a heavy hitter in the mob scene. He had a crew of about 10 made men and 20 to 30 associates who worked with the family and probably wanted to become a made man. He looked like the quintessential mobster. He always wore dark suits and t-shirts, heavy jewelry. He had pinky rings galore. Like, he was mobbed out. And now Pistone was hanging out every day with Lefty and Sonny Black at Sonny's social club, the Motion Lounge in Brooklyn. They would meet up at around 10 or 11, hang out at the social club all day, and have conversations about what they were going to steal next, who was stealing from you, how much money you'd make in a certain operation. So this was just a steady grind of hanging out with the boys and talking shop.
Talking shop.
Yeah.
And planning the next heist.
Pretty much.
Wait, so are they just drinking all day, snorting coke, and planning the next time they'll steal something?
I don't know if they were doing that all day every day, but pretty much, yeah. Yeah, Pistone, when he was talking about it, was like, you would be surprised. There's a lot of downtime and a lot of just like doing nothing. Sitting around and talking shop, getting mad, and then doing something about it. Like,
well, and then sitting there and eating lunch.
But not him. He wasn't doing anything about anything because he couldn't.
Yeah, no, it's got to be weird. You have to fake everything.
Mm-hmm. It's just never-ending improv for 6 years.
Yeah, well, he committed to the bit. Gotta hand it to him.
That's true. This was unprecedented for the FBI. They had an agent as an active member in a major crew in the New York Mafia. No one before Pistone had ever gotten this close. Pistone was in an even better position to gain information on the inner workings of the mafia. He had insight on drug deals, extortion, hijacking, political corruption, corrupt law enforcement, and so much more. But more than that, by working with Lefty, he was able to find out who the major players were in the Bonanno family and other New York mafia families, giving the FBI names of captains and bosses, which they did not have before. This was major because typically they were dealing with the guys on the bottom doing all the dirty work. They never had the upper echelon of the mob. They didn't know their names, they didn't know their faces, and now they did for like multiple major mob families in New York City. Pistone's intelligence helped the FBI build a much clearer picture on not just the Bonanno family, but the mafia as a whole, and they were shocked to find out how much the different families were actually cooperating with each other. They wanted Pistone to figure out the extent of the mob families working together. How far did it go? Did it leave New York City? They wanted to expose the mafia over the entire country. So what started out as a 6-month operation was being extended indefinitely. Now there was no end date. It was just like, let's see how much we can get. They wanted Pistone to embed himself into the mafia so deep that he could take down the whole thing. It didn't take long before Pistone was able to gain intelligence on other mob families across the country. He was able to vouch for other undercover agents and instigate connections with other mafia families as far as Los Angeles. Clear across the country, he's getting other mob connections. He even had a face-to-face meeting with the mob boss in Milwaukee, which was the first time any FBI agent had ever sat down with such a high-ranking mob boss. The FBI were also trying to infiltrate the major mafia family in Florida, the Traficantes. So they set up a club, the King's Court Bottle Club in Holiday, Florida, which they hoped would be a watering hole for Florida's mobsters. The FBI wanted Pistone to get the Bonanno family down to Florida, so he suggested to Sonny Black that he become a partner in this club in Florida, and Sonny apparently liked that idea, so he sent Pistone and Lefty to Florida to check it out. And when Lefty saw the club, he liked what he saw, so he reported back to Sonny. However, Sonny couldn't just become a club partner even though he wanted to. He needed to get permission from the local mafia, which was run by Santo Traficante. So Sonny flew to Florida to meet with Santo to propose running illegal gambling operations together from this club. And Santo agreed, which was a major win for the FBI. They had two major mob bosses from different parts of the country agreeing to do illegal business together. And the FBI had the back office of the King's Court bugged to the gills. They installed microphones and cameras everywhere. Because they built this club specifically to trap the mob. And they got him. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got him.
Ew. It's funny because I know one day there's going to have to be some defense in court and they're just going to have him dead to rights. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, I just imagine the argument from them is, oh, I didn't do that. Well, we have 6 months of footage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way.
Every day.
Yeah, we have you on camera. We have your voice recordings for many, many months. So Pistone and other undercover agents started to stage drug deals with the mafia members who were working there. And it was a gold mine of intelligence. And for the Bonannos, they loved it because they were making a ton of money from this club. They did illegal gambling and illegal bingo, which was super popular with the elderly population. Because the patrons at this establishment are just regular Florida residents, so bingo was really big.
Really?
Yes. Like,
they're gambling on bingo.
Uh-huh. Yeah, illegal.
And they love it.
Yeah, illegal bingo.
I mean, how much are we talking?
They must have been making a lot because these mob families are no strangers to big chunks of cash. So for them to be very interested and excited about this place, it had to be raking it in.
Yeah, maybe it's the old rich people. You don't know.
Definitely.
Throwing down 10 bones or something.
Sure.
10K.
And this win for the mafia came with another promotion for Donnie Brasco. Sonny Black asked him to head the operation in Florida, which meant he wouldn't have to report to Lefty anymore. He would be answering directly to Sonny Black. So he is very steadily climbing the rungs of the Bonanno family. Pistone had access to one of the most important captains in the New York Mafia. Since he was based in Florida now, when Pistone would come back to New York to visit, he'd even stay at Sonny's house, and they would spend hours feeding Sonny's racing pigeons that he kept on his roof. Sonny loved his pigeons. They'd go up to the roof every morning, and he'd feed them and change their water and give Donnie history lessons on pigeons, which Pistone said he rarely listened to, but he was hanging out with Sonny.
He's like, this guy is the most boring person I have ever met.
I don't think he felt that way, though. Pistone became very close with Sonny Black, and he said, quote, although he was a stone-cold killer and a gangster, Sonny was the kind of guy you could spend time with. They would, of course, talk about their deals and making money, but Pistone said he could also have other conversations with him, and he ended up gaining a lot of trust. So he's, like, straight chilling with a major mob boss.
Like, I mean, you gotta be, like, it's just gotta be the water you swim in, you know? You got to be super comfortable with this or you're dead.
Yeah. So Pistone's relationship with Sonny Black gave him even more access to information on the Bonanno family, of course, because he has so much information. He's one of the captains. And he discovered that one part of the Bonanno family that were recent immigrants from Sicily, known as Zips, were enormous drug importers, and they were using a series of pizza restaurants to distribute these drugs. They were distributing heroin out of pizza shops all over New York and Pennsylvania, and these Zips weren't just dealing drugs, they were also used to carry out murders and whatever else the family needed.
So you could order heroin and a large pepperoni.
Yep. I'll take one large regular pie and a couple of bags of heroin. What are the increments?
A little spice.
I don't even know.
I don't know. I was thinking Coke, and I was like, 8-ball.
Yeah, I don't even know. But I'll take like 3 or 4 heroin and a regular pie.
Yep. Makes sense.
I also wonder, like, are these pizza restaurants still in business today? Like, I don't, they're no longer run by the mafia. Spoiler alert.
As far as you know.
Well, that's true, I guess, as far as I know. But at one point they were, and I mean, New Yorkers love pizza, right? Pizza shops gotta stay open.
I'm sure they're like, well, they threatened to kill my whole family, so, you know, I paid them.
Right.
You know, like, what else are you gonna do?
Now it's just pizza, hold the heroin, you know?
Yeah, not as fun.
Well, I'll take the pizza. So the FBI now knows about these major drug trafficking rings. And they, of course, couldn't do anything about this knowledge because if it got back to Pistone, he'd be killed on the spot. They couldn't really do anything with the information Pistone gathered until he surfaced because it was way too dangerous for him. So he is like a gold mine of information and they are building their cases for literal years, but they can't do anything until Donnie Brasco is dead. And by that, I mean, you know, he's just back to being Joe Pistone. And at that point, there was another major threat to Pistone's life. Tony Mira, who was his first contact into the mob, had gotten out of prison early and was furious that Donnie was earning money from Sonny Black and Lefty Ruggiero and wanted revenge. Can I get an uh-oh in the chat?
Wait, so he feels like he owns him?
Yeah. He's like, I brought him in. I should be making that money.
Well,
he's mine.
I don't know. I feel like, isn't Sonny like higher up than him?
I don't think so. I think Tony Mira and Sonny are both of equal rank. They're both made men. I think they're both captains.
What do you do? They're both untouchable.
Okay, so actually, no. Tony Mira is not a captain, but he was not afraid of Sonny Black. So he went to his captain and told him he wanted Donnie to work with him and not Lefty, since he was the one that brought him around, and Sonny didn't want this. Sonny now really likes Donnie, and he makes him a lot of money, and so he's like, Donnie's mine. So they're having a turf war over Donnie, who is an FBI agent, by the way. Like, kind of crazy. So Mira then took his complaint even farther. He took it to a bunch of captains, and they decided Sonny and Lefty would have to defend their claim to Donnie in a series of meetings, or sit-downs. After many meetings that were like 4 hours each, Sonny Black and Lefty won, and they got to keep Donnie as their own.
Is Pistone aware of any of this or no?
Yes. So,
oh boy.
After every meeting, Sonny or Lefty would call Donnie and be like, this is what just happened.
Okay, so here's what happened, okay?
They're not taking you. You're mine. And he's like, what are you talking about, Left? Yes. There are recordings of this.
I'm yours, Left. You know that.
That's not quite how it went. He's like, I just spent 4 hours talking about you. He's like, what are you talking about, Left? What are they talking about? And he's like, don't act like you don't know. You're mine. He's like, yeah, I'm yours.
Yeah, right? Like, kind of weird. Hey, it's the mob.
Yeah, it isn't gay. It's just the mob.
It's not gay.
It really isn't. I mean,
no, it's very much not, but yeah. It sounds gay.
It does sound gay. It certainly sounds gay. So Sonny and Lefty won. They got to keep Donnie, but Mira was not done. So since Tony Mira couldn't have him, he didn't want anyone to have him.
Oh, wow.
And he went to all the captains once again and told them that Donnie had stolen $250,000 from the family after a drug deal, which was a major accusation. It required another series of high-level meetings or sit-downs, which was essentially like a trial for Donnie Brasco. High-ranking mobsters from the Bonanno family, some of the Zips, and even some Bonannos from as far away as Canada were called in to judge these accusations. And since Donnie was only an associate, he couldn't even be in the room. If Donnie were found guilty, he would be killed immediately, and he can't defend himself at all.
Sounds like a fair trial.
Right. So he had to rely on his new bestie, Sonny Black, to represent him. And after almost 4 weeks, with Sonny fighting for Donnie every step of the way, eventually his life was spared. This was a big deal because Sonny went against other Bonanno captains and said he could vouch for Donnie 100%.
Wow. So it's like just him? He's the only one defending him?
Yeah, because he's a captain. So it was like all captains versus Sonny.
Wow. Well, he's going to feel like an idiot when this comes out, huh?
It's tough. It's really tough. This was a big turning point in Sonny and Donnie's relationship. Sonny, at that point, considered Donnie to be a very close friend, and they started hanging out even more. Sonny took Donnie under his wing and really confided in him. Donnie was sitting at the kitchen table of one of the most powerful men in the mob in his underwear and t-shirt, shooting the shit on a regular basis. But as you could have guessed, Tony Mira hated Donnie's guts and obviously wanted him dead. The FBI became concerned this operation had become too dangerous and wanted to pull Pistone out, but he managed to convince his boss to continue just a little while longer. He didn't think there was anything to worry about. He knew he could handle it.
Wait, how many years in is he now?
This is about 5 years in.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take him to get the connection with Sonny?
I don't actually know how many years, but he started off with Lefty, who was directly under Sonny, and then worked his way up to being kind of like Sonny's right hand. So I assume probably 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Shit runs deep, man.
It really runs deep. Like, he is definitely in this Bonanno family at this point. Like, he has been for a long time, but the fact that he's the right hand of Sonny is really crazy.
He's also survived multiple challenges.
Yeah.
To his credibility, or had multiple trials. I don't know.
Yeah, so many. And he was also a part of the Bonanno family at this point, like during some of the most violent turf wars and like civil war kind of happening within the Bonanno family. So it's been dangerous the whole time. Of course it has, but like even more so than just like existing regularly in the mafia, which is a crazy sentence. But yeah, so he's very good at what he does. It's also crazy to me that Tony Mira like actively wants him dead. So there's like someone out there who genuinely wants to target him. And the FBI is like, man, we got to pull you out. Like, this is way too dangerous. And he's like, no, I can handle it.
You know, I feel like this is kind of like, if you're going to shoot at the king, you better not miss, you know, because they're trying to take down the whole mob.
Yeah.
So if you take down half,
I don't know,
or a quarter, is it as effective? I mean, they'll probably adapt to everything you did.
I still think it would have been a lot of people that they would have gotten because of how much intelligence he had gathered over five years. So I think he could have come out at that point and still gotten.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, if you've already dedicated 5 years of your life doing this, you might as well, like, get as much as you think you can.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, what he's thinking. But also, it's one thing to fly under the radar and, like, have a light threat to your life throughout the 5 years. But like at this point, someone actively wants him dead, you know, like he's pissed someone off enough that they're coming after him.
Right.
It's crazy that he was like, no, I'm good.
Mira is insane.
Right. And he's like the knife man. Like, he's going to stab him to death probably if he gets close enough. So by the end of 1980, Pistone had been undercover in the mafia for nearly 5 years. They had wiretaps on multiple senior members of the New York mob and cases open on the Sicilian heroin trafficking, Colombian drug deals out of Florida, and the Milwaukee mob. But Pistone's work was about to get way more complicated. In Florida, a big Las Vegas night was planned for the King's Court on January 17, 1981, which would include a lot of illegal gambling. Sonny and a number of New York mobsters flew down for the event because they're still working with the Traficantes. The local sheriff had been paid off to turn a blind eye to this illegal gambling night. Pistone was right there when they paid the sheriff off, and he assured them that everything was taken care of. And at first, the evening was going well. The place was packed and money was flowing, but as the night was in full swing, the local cops showed up and raided the club and arrested the mob members. Sonny, who refused to provide identification, was taken to jail, and he was bailed out the following day, but was furious. Not only was this a setback, but it was a major embarrassment for the Bananos, and they didn't even know if they'd be able to patch things up with the Tropicantes. Sonny became convinced there must be a rat, and Pistone was concerned suspicion might fall on him. And as the crew flew back to New York, things became even more concerning. Months earlier, Pistone had borrowed a luxury boat from the FBI to take Lefty and his mob connections in Florida on a fishing trip. And now, Lefty had spotted an article in a magazine detailing an FBI sting operation in which undercover FBI agents had used this boat to entrap corrupt congressmen. And the article included a picture of the boat, which was the same one that Pistone had borrowed to impress Lefty and the Florida mob connections.
Ruh-roh.
So they're seeing the boat and they're like,
huh.
Hey, Donnie, come over here.
Just want to talk.
Just want to talk to you.
Let's go swimming.
Let me know, how'd you get access to this FBI boat, huh? And he's like, Left, come on.
Hey, you know, you stop playing.
The FBI operation wasn't supposed to surface for a very long time, but it had gotten exposed, and now the boat was on the front page of Newsweek. So they're like, this is really bad.
Pistone, how are you going to get out of this one?
Mm-hmm. Lefty demanded to know how Donnie had gotten a hold of this FBI boat, and Donnie told him, remember that girl we met out in San Diego? I'm not going to do the accent.
I like it.
He told Lefty, this girl they met out in San Diego had said her brother had a boat in Miami and they could use it anytime. Pistone was like, listen, Lefty, you were there. You heard her say that. Also, even if it was a government boat, they were after politicians, so they were safe. They never came after them. So he's like, yeah, it might have been an FBI boat, but I didn't know that. It was some broad.
Hey, they weren't looking for you.
It was some broad and a brother.
Some broad.
She said I could use the boat, so I used the boat. What's the problem?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's pretty good.
Thank you. Okay. Lefty seemed to buy Pistone's story, but he couldn't fully be sure that he still had the trust of him and Sonny. But that doubt fully disappeared when Sonny Black approached Donnie and offered him full membership into the mafia. To do this, Sonny had to go to every captain in the family and tell them that he was going to propose Donnie Brasco. And if one captain had anything negative to say, Sonny wouldn't have been able to propose him. But every captain in the Bonanno family agreed. And here he was asking Donnie if he wanted to become a made man.
Well, say yes,
that's
Donnie.
That's pretty crazy.
He became a made man in the mob while committing no crimes.
Zero crimes.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah. If he agreed, he would have access to some of the most powerful mobsters in America and access to their most closely guarded secrets. However, the FBI was concerned. Having Pistone inducted to a senior level of the mafia was a whole other thing. It could compromise their entire operation. Typically, to become a member, you would have to kill someone. But even though Sonny wasn't asking Donnie to do that, to become a made man, the FBI felt this would destroy his credibility before a court. On top of this proposal, things were also getting more dangerous for Donnie. The Bonanno family was in the middle of a civil war, and Sonny Black was right at the forefront of it. The issue had begun 2 years earlier when Sonny Black had taken part in the murder of a boss of his own family, Carmine Galante. And now Sonny was ordered to take out three rival captains. So with tensions and violence rising, it became a major concern that Pistone could be killed in the crossfire since he was so close with Sonny. Suddenly, everyone was carrying a gun. Sonny gave Donnie a gun to carry around to protect himself, since the guys under these three other captains were looking to kill them first. And finally, Sonny Black put Pistone in a position the FBI had been so desperately trying to avoid for nearly 6 years. Sonny ordered Donnie to track down a rival mobster, Bruno Indelicato, and kill him. Donnie couldn't refuse this contract, because if he did, he would be killed. So he had to accept. Sonny sent Donnie to Florida, since that's where they believed Bruno was. And Pistone's plan was, if he found Bruno, he would call the FBI to get him, and then they would make it look like a hit. That way Pistone could go back and say he'd taken care of it.
It's really getting out of hand. Like, when, they're going to yank him now, or...
Yeah, so
or
the FBI...
after this, like, fake hit.
No. So the FBI agrees with you. They think it was getting out of hand, and they decided it had become far too dangerous to continue this operation. That was when Joe Pistone was ordered to pull out of the six-year operation. Pistone was very upset that the operation had ended. He wanted to become a made man and take his credibility within the mob through the roof. But Pistone couldn't convince his bosses, and now he was being pulled out. 2 weeks later, on July 28, 1981, with Pistone sent into hiding, Sonny was visited at his club in Brooklyn by FBI agents, who presented him with photographs of him and Donnie and told him, "You know this man as Donnie Brasco. He is an FBI agent." Sonny really didn't believe them at first. But eventually, Sonny Black began to accept the truth. But that also meant, as the man who had brought the undercover FBI agent into the family, he'd be killed. The FBI had offered Sonny protection in exchange for him coming forward against his family, and they gave him some time to think it over. They watched as he retreated to his pigeon coop to think over his options. And then eventually, Sonny disappeared. The only way they knew he was still alive was he asked his girlfriend to get in touch with Donnie. According to Pistone, Sonny told his girlfriend, quote, "I want you to get in touch with Donnie and tell him that I loved him and that he was better than us. He never made us do anything we wouldn't have done anyway."
What?
They had a real relationship.
Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, when it goes on that long, it becomes not completely fake.
Yeah, they spent every day together for years. They were best friends. "I want you to get in touch with Donnie and tell him I loved him and that he was better than us. He never made us do anything we wouldn't have done anyway." Isn't that crazy?
Wow. It's just not what you would think.
I know. You'd think he would have been furious and, like, betrayed, and he's going to come after him himself and track him down and kill him. Like, no. He's like, "I loved him."
Yeah, well, yeah, and also, I'm out of here.
Well, not quite. Sonny knew he was going to die, and yet he didn't blame Donnie, which gave Pistone a lot of respect for Sonny as a man. Ultimately, Sonny wouldn't go against his family, even knowing that he was now on a hit list. Pistone told agents when they saw Sonny's pigeon coops getting torn down, they'd know he was dead. And 17 days later, the FBI saw Sonny's pigeon coops being taken down. Sonny Black's body was found washed up in the water off Staten Island. His hands, which had welcomed an FBI agent into the family, had been cut off. An informant later told FBI that the day Sonny died, he went to the bar, gave the bartender his apartment keys, his money, and his diamond ring, and told him, "I'm going to a sit-down and I probably won't be back." When he got there, he was shot once, and the first bullet didn't kill him, so he said, "Hit me again and make it good." And those were his last words. Pretty gangster way to go out.
Yeah, but swift and brutal.
Yep. At that point, the mob closed in on anyone who had been involved with Donnie Brasco. They killed Sonny, Tony Mira, who was shot by his own cousin, and Jilly. Pistone didn't want any of these men to be killed. He just wanted them arrested. And in his mind, their murders weren't his doing. The FBI learned that Lefty had been summoned to a sit-down where he would be murdered, and they intercepted him and arrested him. When the agents got him, he thought that it was a hit team, since the agents were wearing nondescript clothes and in random cars. But with Lefty in custody and backed into a corner, they used his information to go after hundreds of other mafia members. And it wasn't just Lefty's information at that point, it was the years of information that Pistone had gathered. And Joseph Pistone ended up testifying in about 17 different trials, which resulted in 235 convictions. They nearly wiped out the Bonanno family. They also nearly wiped out the entire mafia family in Milwaukee and in Florida. In 1985, Pistone testified in the trial of the Sicilian heroin traffickers, and this became known as the Pizza Connection, and it was one of the longest trials in American history. And 18 of 19 defendants were convicted, which was an incredible victory for the FBI. Pistone also took part in what was called the Commission Trial, where he identified the heads of the New York mob families. It was referred to as the biggest sweep of underworld leadership. He took down 5 mob bosses. His evidence and testimony secured convictions on 151 counts. Gangsters at all levels of the mob were sent to prison thanks to Pistone, including Lefty, for conspiring to murder the 3 captains, distributing drugs, extortion, bank robbery, and illegal gambling in Florida. He ended up spending 15 years in prison. And you want to know what Pistone got from the FBI at the end of this operation? A $500 bonus. Thank you for your time.
Here is my God.
500 smackaroonies. Go buy yourself a gumball, twerp.
Are you kidding me? Like, I don't know. They should have given him like 100 mil. I mean,
100 mil.
I'm not even joking. Like, how many convictions? 5 mob bosses and an entire family wiped out? Like, how many people's lives did he save because of that? How much crime did he stop because of that?
Countless. He got 235 people taken down. He took down, like, almost the entire mafia.
Right. I mean, like, how do you put a price on that? Like, it's not a problem today because of what he did, like, in no small part, right?
Not in the way that it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, we don't really have this criminal organization that is worth more than our most expensive companies because of this guy.
Yep.
And how brave he was. And he gave him $500.
Yeah, they're like, how does $500 sound? He's like, what?
It's like, I sacrificed my family.
My life.
My life for 6 years.
6 years, yeah. And it was supposed to be a 6-month operation.
Yeah, I mean, there's never enough money for that. I mean,
no, but $500 seems like a slap in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy work.
Did his bosses like hate him? I don't get it.
I don't think so. I don't know. I really don't know the reason why he only got a $500 bonus for this, but that's a really shitty bonus.
I mean, like, at least let him take, like, the cash that you stole from the mobsters. Like, yeah, throw him a little change. Come on.
Nope. The mafia responded to everything that had happened by placing a $500,000 bounty on Joe Pistone's head.
Oh, yeah. I was like, they're going to try and kill him until the day he dies.
Yeah. They didn't usually go after law enforcement, but they felt this was different. Donnie had broken bread with them. He had crossed the line. FBI agents visited mafia bosses in New York and advised them not to murder Pistone. The contract was...
Really?
Yep. The contract was apparently dropped by Paul Castellano because he thought killing a federal agent would, quote-unquote, attract too much attention.
Yeah, I mean, if you grease a federal agent, they're really going to come after you.
Yeah, they've taken down way too many of you to kill a federal agent at this point, right? Save who you got.
I know. Well, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, they got to find him first.
Yeah.
He's in witness protection. Pistone has been active as an author and consultant to worldwide law enforcement agencies, including Scotland Yard, and has been called to testify before the U.S. Senate as an expert on organized crime. He detailed his undercover experience in his 1988 book, Donnie Brasco, My Undercover Life in the Mafia. And this book was the basis for the 1997 film, Donnie Brasco, for which Pistone worked as a technical advisor, starring Johnny Depp as Pistone and Al Pacino as Lefty. There was also a short-lived TV series made in 2000, and he's written a bunch of other books, and he's taken part in numerous documentaries and interviews about his time as Donnie Brasco. And to this day, Joe Pistone lives under a pseudonym in an undisclosed location with his wife Maggie until her death in 2025, and their 3 daughters under assumed names as well. And he's like in his 80s now.
Oh, he made it.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Yeah, I hope. Wait, did he kept his wife?
Yes. Yeah, his wife and daughters. His wife died last year.
Wow, that is a feat. Could you imagine doing long distance for 6 years while you have young kids?
It's kind of like he went off to war a little bit, you know? Like, he took down all of the mafia, basically.
I know, but, like, even when you go off to war, you only do, like, you rotate in and out, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying it's the same. I'm just saying, like, they waited for him.
Damn.
It's not like he was doing nothing, you know? It's not like he'd, like, ran away and cheated on his wife.
He was busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, am I wrong in seeing this as he's kind of single-handedly did this? I mean, I know he had the support of the FBI, and that's not nothing, but, like, he was the guy.
Yeah, I think we agree on that, totally.
That brought down everyone. I don't know, I'm just not trying to oversell it, you know?
No, you're not.
He's just, like, kind of an American hero I didn't know about.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. I haven't seen the movie Donnie Brasco. I'm assuming you haven't either, because...
No.
Yeah, I really want to watch it. Because, I mean, Johnny Depp and Al Pacino. But, yeah, it's a major thing that he did. And I don't even really know how to wrap my head around it. Like, he really yes-anded his way up the rungs of the mafia until he was proposed to become a made man. Like, that is an unbelievable feat. He took down 235 members of the mafia and the five major families in New York to the point where they were basically just like street gangs. He took down the Milwaukee mafia and the Florida mafia and had connections in Los Angeles as well. So he probably got a few people in Los Angeles. Like, how do you even wrap your head around that?
Yeah, I don't know. Some people are just that good. Did he talk about like what drove him or what his motivation was?
He just wanted to take him down. He's like, this is my job. Like, but truly, he kept being like, yeah, it's my job.
That's how he talked about it?
Pretty much.
Just kind of analytical, cold?
I mean, no, not like cold and analytical.
Or like, that's the wrong word, but nonchalant?
Very nonchalant. I mean, he was a gangster for 6 years.
I guess.
And he was like laughing about memories and things. He was like, when he was talking about Sonny getting arrested after the Las Vegas night in Florida, he was like, oh boy, he was mad. Like, he's like, he was not happy the next day. I'll tell you what. Like, you know, he had good moments with them.
Yeah, that's got to be the other crazy thing. Did he ever write about like the complexity of that?
I honestly don't. I'd be really interested to read his books because I'm sure he did. He wrote multiple books.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be weird because, you know, you're making, I mean, you're infiltrating, but you're also like making a genuine connection with somebody, but it's just to an end.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. To the point where at the end, when Sonny learned about who he truly was, he's like, tell him I loved him.
Damn.
He knew he was going to get killed. There was nothing he could do. He had a hit and it was inevitable. He was getting killed. And he's like, well, he got me. Tell him I loved him.
And he just gave all of his shit to the bartender.
Yep.
Well, I mean, he kind of went out on his terms.
He did.
Woof.
It's a crazy story.
That's so insane.
I know. This whole story is insane from start to finish. I really like had such a good time looking into it.
Yeah, I mean, of course it is. Like, there's just been so many movies about the mob.
Mm-hmm. And the other story that I was going to talk about was the one that inspired Goodfellas, Henry Hill. Oh,
really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that too. They're very interesting stories.
I mean, I'm in. I'm so in.
Right? I know.
Yeah, I really don't know what else to say. It's just, I can't believe the scale. Yeah, I mean, what else? I don't know what else to say. I'm just dumbfounded.
That's fair. I don't really have much else to say either, but I really enjoyed talking about it, and I hope that you enjoyed listening to it wherever you are out there.
Yep. But stay off drugs, kids.
Yeah, stay off.
No drugs.
And stay out of the mob. I don't know.
Don't shoot people.
Don't shoot people. Don't take heroin, and don't be in the mob. And I think that's what we'll end on. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that I've taken Friday off this week.
Nice.
Got a little long weekend. It's the summer. What's your good thing?
My good thing is that I just bought my first piece of fall decor today.
Okay.
I really don't have any fall decor. I have like quite a few pieces for like Christmas time, but I have never really collected fall decor. And I was like, let me just mosey on into Home Goods and see what I can find. And I found a really cute jack-o'-lantern statue. And I'm really excited about it because now I can start my fall decor collection, which is
it's growing
really good. It's I mean I have one thing so far.
Well,
so.
You have the skeletons and
Oh yeah I did buy a skeleton too.
Didn't you buy two?
No, it was just one skeleton.
And then you have we're gonna be strapped for Halloween. This is my point, you know.
Listen,
we're gonna have stuff.
I recently saw a TikTok comparing women going into either Home Goods or Marshall's or, you know, whatever, like a store like that, and just like looking around for the best home decor and like pillows and whatever, as going back to like hunting and gathering, you know, like I'm gathering for our family.
Yeah. Like,
this is in my bones. I have to buy the skeleton and the jack-o'-lantern statue because I'm providing for our family.
Right.
And our people.
Yeah.
The people need a jack-o'-lantern statue. It's in my blood.
So we're hunting and gathering by spending money.
No. Yes. But for the good of the community.
For our family.
For our family and the good of the community. You understand? And you're growing your garden because you're hunting the peppers. I don't know.
I did get like probably 5 pounds of peppers. It's crazy.
Yeah,
how much
a lot of peppers.
There's still more.
I know.
So
pretty good garden. It's popping off.
Yeah, well, that's like actually gathering.
Shut up. I'm gathering throw pillows.
All right.
Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to get access to all of our bonus episodes and other fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. You can find videos of me talking about other things like this over on YouTube at Steph Today. Check it out. You won't regret it. If you or anyone knows a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. I post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is nottodaypodcast and a Twitter that is nottodaypodcast, but the end of the podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.